We continue our focus on the trip that I took to Israel, Egypt, Jordan, some insights that I gained in my time there. Snapshots is what I called it, just to let you in on. I've also been able to share some of the pictures that I took there. And this morning's focus is on, and this is an insight into how difficult it is to be me. I sat there and you can read this blessed or blessed. And I thought, should I include a little hyphen after the second S? And you might think, what in the world is he even talking about? We are blessed, but we are also the blessed. Right? And so I want us to come away with this sense of we are the blessed. We are the people of God. Right? God blesses even people who don't follow him with rain and sunshine and the seasons. And so his blessings are overflowing to both the godly and the ungodly. But in a real sense, we are the blessed. Right, his favor rests on us. He puts his arms around us. We bear his name. He stamps his ownership on us who commit to him. Blessed and blessed. So, for what it's worth, that has been part of my thinking this week as well. I'm going to start us off with a reading from Proverbs, and then we will continue. Hear the words from Proverbs 3, 13 through 18. It is a passage that you should notice starts with blessed and ends with blessed, and the source of that, what gives meaning to that is verse 17, and I will point to that when we get there. Starting at verse 13, Proverbs 3, blessed are those who find wisdom, those who gain understanding, for she is more profitable than silver and yields better returns than gold. She is more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand, in her left hand are riches and honor. And here verse 17, her ways are pleasant ways and all her paths are peace. Shalom. She's a tree of life to those who take hold of her. Those who hold her fast will be blessed. All her paths are shalom. Those who claim God as their own, who are the blessed, will find peace. Have you ever asked why? I think there's lots of occasions in our lives that prompt this question, that tries to understand what is wrong, what is going wrong, what has gone wrong, where an overwhelming sense of darkness or helplessness or just not being able to cope floors us, causes us to drop to our knees, and causes us to wonder why. I had a day the other day, and this is not in that big sense, but do you ever have one of those days where everything seems to go wrong? This, that, the next thing. The other day I found myself, I was trapped in my car, couldn't get my seatbelt off. It's really weird to sit in a parking lot. I know this is not a big scheme question why, but it was the third or fourth thing that day that had gone wrong. I had been on the phone trying to get some credit card PIN numbers straightened out and couldn't find anyone to talk to and just got machines. And I'd been on the phone for like 40 minutes only to be hung up on and saying, sorry, we can't help you, try again tomorrow. And it was a machine who said that. And then I got stuck. I thought, well, I'll go to the bank. And I got to the bank, and I'm in the parking lot besides Old Flames, and I'm stuck in my car. I can't get out because my seatbelt won't let me out. The bank is right there. And I thought, wouldn't be so bad if I could, like, have a beer, but I couldn't get there either because I'm stuck. I'm locked in my car. And I asked that question, why? Now, again, that's on a very small, frustrating daily scale, but there are also huge questions in life that make us to wonder why, and why the darkness has to be so deep and so dark. Well, the Bible speaks into the reality of darkness of people that ask why from beginning to end. It's interesting that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and in verse 2 of Genesis, right away we have God naming the reality of this, that things are not the way they're supposed to be. Right? Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and then God speaks. And there is creation, there is all things good. And at the end of the Bible, we get an insight into those things that cause us to question why often. In Revelation chapter 12, we're introduced to the devil, who is pictured here as a dragon. And he challenges the authority of God, and God tosses him out of heaven. And he says, there is only one God, and I am he. And he takes the devil, he takes this angel who challenges his authority, and he throws him out of heaven. And now the devil is pictured as this dragon who is so enraged by this that he enters the world, and his tail sweeps across the earth. The dragon was enraged, but he could not fight the Almighty God, and so he does the next best thing. He fights all that God has created good, and all that God claims as his own. The devil was enraged, it said, and went off to make war. And I think we are experiencing the results of that reality. We are experiencing disorder, all the disorder in the world, that which has gone wrong, the darkness, the things that make us ask why. Why is this happening? Why does the darkness seem so prominent, and why does it keep reappearing, and why does it have a hold on me? How does it enter my life? Disorder and darkness. When I was in Egypt, I visited many temple sites along with our group. The temples are scattered throughout Egypt. Every corner you turn, you see yet another temple to yet another god or goddess. And on occasion, we were allowed to enter the temples. And on this occasion, we entered the temple of Deir al-Medina. I was excited to be able to enter this temple and to see those things that we often only see in museums or on pictures. And once inside, in fact, we saw beautiful murals. Egyptian iconography. They were tales telling the stories of heroism, depicting the history of Egypt. And luckily, we had an Egyptian guide there who was able to point out the significance. He was able to decipher and to interpret the stories that were being told in these temples. Great care had obviously been taken. Dyes made from various plants were injected into these walls, and they had an enduring quality. You could still see the colors leap off of the walls in these beautiful temples. You may have in your reading, you may have in your travels, encyclopedia. Google, you may have come across a picture, something like this. Does that look familiar? This is Maat. She is an Egyptian goddess, and she's always depicted with a single feather on her head. An Egyptian goddess that you will see her in many of the iconography, in the pictures that you see in so many temples. But she is also more than that. She also represents something bigger. When Jesus came to earth, it wasn't just a person that came to earth. It was also the beginning, the start of the kingdom of God coming to earth. It was the gospel, the grace of God entering. It was the beginning of salvation. It was the beginning of God doing something that people could not do for themselves. And so the appearance of Jesus on the earth was not just that, it was something more. It ushered in a whole new reality. Well, something similar is going on with this. Maat, the Egyptian goddess, is not just referring to this goddess, to this specific goddess. She represents a worldview, a way of looking at the world, a way of experiencing the world, a way of living in the world to try and make sense of the disorder. When things go wrong, when crops fail us, when there is no rain, when empires fight against the mighty Egyptian empire, how do you explain that? Maat, the Egyptian goddess, represents a worldview. And it's a worldview that is characterized by order. The highest principle of Maat is that of order, of justice, of harmony. Now, that all sounds good, doesn't it? Who could possibly be against order and justice and harmony? But we also know something about the kingdom of Egypt. They had slaves in their employ. They destroyed other civilizations in their bid for expansion. So order and justice and harmony, in their understanding, as it pertained to the Egyptians, it was very much, in a sense, egotistical. It was a sense of order and justice and harmony, which allowed the Egyptian empire to flourish. Remember, they took the Israelites and they forced them to make straw bricks so they can build more temples to not just the Egyptian goddess Maat, but many others as well. They enslaved them so that they could live in harmony with each other and with a sense of order. The justice was precariously applied. Lesser people are not deserving of justice. Justice doesn't apply for them because they are not fully human. They are not Egyptian, after all. There are many undertones and overtones here in how this unpacks, but that is the way they saw the world. And it worked tremendously well for them. The Egyptian empire grew and it flourished and it was powerful and it was to be feared. And what reigned in all that, what stood underneath all that was Ma'at. The order of the Egyptian empire. Their way of looking at the world and living the world. What stood over against that was this people that they had enslaved, the people of Israel, the Jewish nation. And they used a word, a concept also of shalom. Whenever the Jewish people that they had enslaved and that they had kept working for them and making bricks, whenever they met each other, they would say shalom. It's a Jewish greeting, meaning loosely peace. But again, it is more than that. It is not just a Jewish greeting, not just a friendly way of acknowledging each other. It is a worldview also. It is an expression for the Jewish people of trust. Yes, we are enslaved, but Yahweh. We are a chosen people. We are a special people. Shalom is not just a greeting, it is a way of expressing that you believe and that you trust and you hold on to the fact that this God who defines us is with us. Now, this has done them well over the centuries. Whenever you read Second World War history, of course, you read the terrible tragedy of gas chambers and the extermination of the Jewish people. And even there, in their greeting then, even though millions lost their lives there, there were still this word, shalom, an expression of trust, even amidst the pits of hell, the gas chambers, Auschwitz, and many others. Shalom, a way of looking at the world, a way of coping with that which life brought to them. And here, the main concept here is not so much peace. Yes, peace is there, but it is this idea of wholeness. During the Second World War, of course, there was no peace. Yet they continued saying shalom. Because shalom is more than peace, it is a peace of the mind, of the heart. It is this sense of it will be well. God is here. And as long as God is, we will be okay. You can be whole in the midst of a camp that is meant to exterminate. So, we have two ways of looking at the world. Ma'at, order, and shalom, wholeness. And each one of them has a representative, Ma'at, the Egyptian goddess, but not just her. There were many gods and goddesses, many temples. And the one who stood above all that, the one who was in their spokesperson, their figurehead, was Pharaoh. And on the Jewish side, the one who stood there above it all and through it all was Yahweh, the God of Israel. Ma'at and Shalom. It's interesting, at some point in our travels, we were taken to this place where the Egyptian Nile and the fertility of Egypt met the desert, the Sahara Desert. And it was fascinating to stand on this dividing line, and it was very stark. On the one hand, we had lush fields and trees, and just beyond that, now it looks kind of like a green field and everything dead, but this side here has been worked. But if you look beyond the tree, there is literally nothing there but sand. There's this stark dividing line between that which is lush and fertile and the fields were ordered. If we could look down and they were squares, rectangles, and they all went back to the source, the Nile water, which fed these fields. And because the Nile would overflow its banks regularly, it would bring in all these rich soil, the silt, and it would nourish the ground there. And they say literally you don't even have to so much work the soil and as we do here, as the farmers do here, put in a lot of time and effort to do that. You can literally, they say, if you drop a seed in that rich silt of the Nile, it will grow. You turn around and it will grow. And grow things they do. The fields are lush indeed. And then on the other side, where the overflow of the Nile stops, the soil is, well, you wouldn't even call it soil. It is simply sand. It is dust. And it is stark. The difference between the order of a carefully plotted farmer's fields and lands and the wasteland of the desert. You could see farmers harvesting their crops on the one hand, and on the other hand, there would be this foreboding expanse of heat and desert sand. A clear dividing line. It was an awesome place to stand. And it is exactly in that place that the Israelites stood. They had been enslaved by Egypt. Now, initially, they were not slaves. Remember, the Pharaoh had been pleased with Joseph and his advice to them, and it got them through 7 years of famine. And Joseph then was able to bring his family, and that Pharaoh was so pleased with the advice that Joseph had given him. And so he said, here, you have the land of Goshen, right here, a rich land. But then as another Pharaoh took his place, he didn't have that positive memory of Joseph. And so he said, what are these people doing in this prime land over there? They're not even Egyptians. This is bringing disharmony to Ma'at. This is not the way it's supposed to be. It's a disordered Ma'at. And so he enslaved the Israelites and he forced them to make bricks so that more temples and that more cities could be built, more roads could be built. He enslaved the Israelites. And so now the Israelites are working for Egypt, for the Pharaoh. And God sees this. He remembers his promises to them. And he says, this is not what I intend for my people, the blessed. And so he sends someone to them. Remember who? It was, of course, Moses. He rises up Moses, makes sure that Moses is well prepared. He grows up in the palace of Pharaoh himself. He is well equipped. And Moses is sent to the people of Israel who are enslaved, and he says, I'm going to take you out. God has heard your cries. And I'm taking you out. And you would think that they would be overjoyed. But they had come to appreciate, even as slaves, they had come to appreciate the order. It provided a certain harmony. It provided a very clear path of how to live, and a clear path for every day. If we do this, we will eat at the end of the day. And we know what to do the next day. So even in their enslavement, they started adopting the worldview of Ma'at. This is the way it's supposed to be. This is what will lead to harmony. This is who we are. Moses comes along and he says, I'm taking you out of Egypt. You know the story of the plagues, the 10 plagues. And finally, they are allowed to leave. Pharaoh says, get out of here. You are causing me too much trouble. And they are just a ways down the road. They stand in front of the Red Sea. And now they see a dust cloud behind them. And the Egyptian forces are coming because they're thinking, we need these people after all, and so they're going to be hauled back and enslaved again into Egypt. And the Israelites have a mini revolt of their own. They say to Moses, what have you done to us? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone. Let us serve the Egyptians. It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in this desert. This, it doesn't say that, this God-forsaken desert. We would rather be slaves in Egypt. At least there was a certain order to our slavery. We knew what was coming. We knew what we're going to eat. How are we going to eat? What are we going to eat? What are we going to drink? At least in Egypt, our pots were full. You've brought us to this. And Moses answered, do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Lord will fight for you. You only need to trust in him. Ma'at and Shalom. The Egyptians had a way of life. And even those who were enslaved by it, even those who had their dignity ripped away from them, even those whose image of God was being wiped away, was being obscured. They still preferred the order of Ma'at than trust in God, Shalom. I will lead you out of Egypt into a land flowing with milk and honey. And they stood on that dividing line. You remember the dividing line. And they looked at Egypt, and what did they see? Lush fields, green, ordered. They knew which plot they had to take care of. They knew what they had to do. They knew they would go home at the end of the day. They knew that there would be food in their pot. They knew that they would have water to drink. They knew that they could bear children. They knew that life would be ordered and well, even as slaves. And then they looked the other way, and what did they see? A land flowing with milk and honey. No. What they saw was a God-forsaken desert, nothing but sand. And I told you in a previous sermon, I walked 20 minutes into that desert. And I grumbled, I dare say, more than the Israelites, saying, George, where are you going? The Wi-Fi on the bus, the air-conditioned bus, is over there. And every hill, every dune that he would take us on, I would think, yes, now there's going to be an oasis. And then there was nothing each time. There was nothing but sand. And I lost my trust in George in 20 minutes. And I was going to rebel and say, I think, I dare say that I probably will find that bus if I turn around and go back. The ordered life set in place by human beings, this is the way to live. And the life of faith, where God says, trust me. Where Jesus says, follow me. Life can hit us hard, can't it? When you're in school and none of the kids want to play with you. They are choosing for teams and nobody's choosing you because you're not very good at playing that. Or you're in the lunchroom and nobody comes and eats with you. Or maybe you don't have lunch and nobody shares your lunch, their lunch with you. When you're a teenager and you enter the high school and you've transferred in from another town and you have no friends and you're seen as the odd person out, you make different choices and you're ostracized. You don't partake in drinking or drugs and so you're shoved to the side. When you're struggling to find a job to help you with your family and you don't have this, the income stream is not good for you. When you don't have a job that can provide, you feel that other people are looking at you and don't fully accept you as by their measure of success. You struggle with an addiction. You can't possibly share that with anybody. You are depressed. Your thoughts are running away with you. You are not that awesome, perfect Christian that everybody else seems to be, and you feel isolated and alone. You're mothering children, and they're driving you nuts. But you can't say that, can you? As parents, your children no longer go to church. What do you do with that? And the stuff of life, the real stuff, the choices that they seem to be making are causing your guts and your inside to wrench. As grandparents, you see grandchildren who don't know the stories. Noah, Joseph, David. The stuff of life. Life isn't all as ordered as you'd like it to be. And you're wishing, you're desiring, you're reaching out for order. You work harder, you do more to try and fix it. And you become a slave. You want to provide everything for your children, everything for your church. You do more and you do more and you become a slave. The family therapist, Virginia Satir, not a Christian, she said, life is not what it's supposed to be. It's what it is. The way you cope with it is what makes the difference. Not a Christian, but insight from a therapist who has seen brokenness and broken families. Ma'at. On the other side, a different way of looking at the world. And to wake up knowing that God is on my side is enough. Shalom. In my trip in Israel, I failed, and I struggled with failure. I failed to scale Mount Sinai. We went there with a group of 47, and there were a number of people who didn't make it. I was among that. As we neared at 6 o'clock after a full day, we had started the day at 6 a.m. It was now 6 p.m., and we were about to scale the mountain 6.5 hours upward. The oxygen was, I was weary and tired. I had never walked that much in my life. And now we're at a place where the oxygen level is I'm sucking in the air, and I see other people around me, and they still seem to be joking with each other, and they seem to be ready to go the distance. And I'm thinking, I can't do this. And I have a heart attack halfway up. Then what happens? In a wasteland, Mount Sinai, do I want to stand where Moses stood? And then George says, we don't even know if this is particularly the one that Moses went. Could have been that one, could have been this one. Why are we climbing this thing? And I felt the darkness, I felt failure, I felt I was failing the rest, I felt alone, I felt I can't do this. I felt not part of the group. I felt like giving up. I felt like sitting down. I was not feeling good. And I made my way down 2.5 hours to that point while the rest continued up. And I wrote in my diary. Here's an entry from May 2nd, 2019. May I have your shalom, I prayed, amidst my disordered ma'at. Teach me your way, O Lord, and thank you for this time to reflect, to wrestle. I am Israel, with all her flaws, but somehow chosen by you, loved, adopted, and fold me back into your people. Amen. I came across, and this is the end result of 6-7 full pages in my diary where I struggled, where I cried out, where I shook my fist at God, where I was angry at the other people who could make it, where I was lamenting my failures. I had to find shalom because the order, all my best efforts failed me. And I found shalom. Psalm 85, verse 8, I will listen to what God the Lord says. He promises peace to his people, but let them not return to folly. Are you striving in life? Are you trying to keep it all together? Are you trying to fix everything? Are your best efforts failing? Your best efforts to please God, to fix your family, to thrive your church? Does the order that you so much want and desire, is it not there? Are you living ma'at? I invite you into shalom. Be still and know that I am God. Peace. Peace be with you. Trust me. I will bring you to a place, to a land flowing with milk and honey. You will live eternally. Wholeness in a disordered world. The next 5 minutes, I want you to listen to a song by All Sons and Daughters called Rest in You. You don't have to sing along. The words will be there. Let these words minister to your soul.